Yeah, let me just launch straight into it. What I will say, first of all, welcome. It's great to see everybody here today, and really pleased that there's a diverse group. There's a few guys from Arena, and then there's people represented from the other churches as well, which is beautiful. What I will say is I'm going to endeavour to work at real pace because I want to be able to give opportunity for questions. And I know that's always the famous last words. You tend to get caught up in your material and then only give a few minutes for questions. But I do want to take questions from the floor. So please just be mindful of that. We wanted to put a church planting session in because church planting is a really important part of church life. I don't want to jump ahead, but I really do think it should be part of our thinking. If we're a pastor here, we need to be thinking about how we can plant, where we can plant, and we'll come to that in a moment. I guess my journey from being young and engaged in ministry at 19 was training with a church planter. So something wasn't just taught, it was caught. Oh, and the other thing is you're not going to get any notes from me. You're just going to have to make your own, okay? I will send them to you if you want, but they're on the back of a fag packet, to be honest with you, okay? So I wanted just something of what it was in me to just come out of me. So something was caught rather than taught. So I'm going back to the age of 19. So I think that was part of my pedigree, part of my heritage. I think the second thing is... And we've been in Arena Church doing something called the AIM Cube. I don't want to get caught up in that, but it's more than personality profile, and it's working out where you are on a scale and why you operate and why you think the way you do. And no surprises that when I was evaluated, I'm in the top right corner where it's people and exploration. So I'm very much that I would be categorized as an explorer, which basically means I'm inquisitive. I like new things. So really, that's been my journey. Now, you might be saying, have I now come to the wrong session? Because I'm not an explorer. In fact, I'm quite the opposite. I like things safe. I haven't been involved in church planting, so what am I doing here? You are at the right session, because if something can ignite in you, then I think the kingdom of God is going to advance. Because I really do believe that church planting is an incredible form of evangelism. And done right, we can actually make some massive inroads into the nation. We keep referencing the quiet revival. Caroline and I were over in with speaking with for Stuart and Tammy. And as we drove through, we saw a number of Methodist churches that they're everywhere closed. And we were just commenting how the Wesley boys just blazed a trail. They just planted churches, and they were legacies for hundreds of years. And I honestly believe that that's what we want to be part of. We want to be part of something that lays something into a community that bears fruit. So that's my journey. That's my background. I was doing a count this morning, and in no way I do believe it is a word or a phrase, braggadocious. I'm not trying to be braggadocious. But I was counting that I've been involved in 15 church plants, either leading or certainly a part of the team. I've got a little bit of wool on my back with regards to this journey. So let me talk to you a few things as an introductory, and then I've got six or seven things that I want to work through. This is really for all of us, but for pastors. I think, first of all, we have to be clear on what model are we wanting to build, okay? I don't want to get too technical, but this is just the reality. When we talk about church planting now, over the last 10, 20 years, it's changed. Phil's in the session, and I'm always humbled when I've got guys who are like Phil in the session, and again, we have to learn from that. I will say he didn't give his age away. He's 70. He's looking great on being 70, which is a milestone birthday. But when he's coming here, and he always has his pad and his pen, and you young guys need to learn from that, because he's always wanting to learn and listen. But Phil would know that probably 30, 40 years ago, there was really just one way of plant. Well, two ways. You were either, they called it the mother-daughter, So it was a larger church, and you'd send a group out, mother, daughter, and then in time, they'd separate and they'd carry on. Or you just go alone from day one. I'll come to that in a minute. But actually, something's happened, and it's called multi-site. And we would be very much in that. Now, I could spend a whole session on multi-site, because we walked into it really not knowing what we were doing, and we're still trying to figure it out now. And by the way, I've spoken to a number of guys who are on it who keep talking to us about it, because there are very few market town churches that are doing multi-site church, and it's a stretch and a strain, but it is a model. So let me go back to you. You have to decide what model are you wanting to run on. As if you're a pastor here, are you wanting to plant multi-site? Are you wanting to have the mother-daughter where you plant some people out and then in time you release them to their own leadership? Or thirdly, they literally go alone from day one. I want to say the third one I would not encourage at all. At all, underline that. Honestly, it's an accident waiting to happen, in my opinion. It's so tough. By the way, the other thing, just some phrases. Church planting is risky business. Just write that down. Because it is. And church planting is difficult. If it was easy, everybody would be doing it. Okay? But I want to say it's the most thrilling thing to be part of something that you're able to see grow over time. It's like having a child. I remember when we had Annie, first of all, and I was used to handling kids. My sister's in the room. She's 15, 16 years younger than me. So I was used to handling little babies, and I love little kids. But when you have your own, you're like flipping out. Oh, dear, what do I do? It was that, the first one. Second one, you're fine. You're just chucking them around wherever, aren't you? But the first one, you're a little bit more, worked up about. And I just want to encourage us, in some ways that can be like what we are with church planting. We may not know what we're doing, but we'll get there. So, you know, church planting is really, really important. I want to say this. It's the most important thing you'll ever build, other than your own marriage and family. That's my personal opinion. I'll say that again. It's the most important thing you will ever build, other than your own marriage and family. Because what you're doing is you're laying something in the ground of legacy. Now, a few Bible verses. Romans 15, verse 20. There's been a little bit of a life verse. Well, not a little bit. It's been a big life verse of me. And this is what it says in the in a modern translation. It's my honor and constant passion to be a pioneer who preaches where no one has ever heard of the Anointed One, instead of building upon someone else's foundation. One of the things, and it's not always the case, but in our journey of being an arena church, I think we'd like to say it this way. We've always punched above our weight. We've always wanted to have a city mindset whilst operating in a market town. It's important, your mindset. You have a city mindset. Okay. But we always wanted to go to places that nobody else wanted to go to. So people weren't clambering around to go into plant into Mansfield. That was our first church plant, honestly. And I have encouraged three different denominational leaders to come and plant into Ilkeston, and they still haven't planted. Because we need another church plant here. But nobody wants to come to Ilkeston. Everybody wants to go to the more trendier parts. And Paul, in this, is basically saying, look, I want to make it my ambition to go where people don't want to go, where people don't know. Now, sometimes God will lead you to places that people do know. We took on Nottingham. It's a big city. That was a journey in itself. But my point is, we want to go and plant where people need to hear. Does that make sense? Yeah. So they're not always going to be the easiest and the trendiest of places. It's a privilege to plant. It really is. I want to give you another Bible verse. We're not here to do the Bible and to prove church planting, but I'm always captured by Matthew chapter 10. And in the Message translation, Jesus charges the disciples, and he uses these two words, go to the lost, go to the confused, go in the neighborhood. And then towards the end of Matthew chapter 10 and verse 10, He tells them what they needed to do. And I will read it. He says, don't think you have to put on a fundraising campaign before you start. You don't need a lot of equipment. You are the equipment. And all you need to keep that going is three meals a day. And then the next point is, it's Peterson writing it. He says, uses two words, travel light. I'll come to that towards the end. I love those thoughts of how we implanting, we are going to, and we need to travel light. I want to take that thought of going, we go, and I want to give you six or seven thoughts that I think we need to go with. First of all, number one, we go with a charge or a call. We go with a charge or a call. For me, it's based around three things. We either see a need. So an example of that is we can see a town nearby that hasn't got any life-giving, you know, prevailing church, and we see a need. Okay? Secondly, we begin to carry a burden. Nehemiah was carrying a burden. His city was burnt down. He was burdened for it. I want to say Mansfield was my hometown. I always had it in my heart. I had a burden for Mansfield, but God called me here. Phil had the opportunity with his national responsibilities through Assemblies of God to get involved in a church, and they did a grand job, him and Kevin Shaw. And then I remember having conversations with him, and I said, look, I've just got this burden in my heart. That would be right, Phil, wouldn't it? Just this burden to go and plant it. It wasn't just seeing a need. I was carrying a burden. And it wasn't just sentiment. I'm not a sentimental person. Trust me. I'm not a sentimental person. But I just sensed there was an opportunity in a town of 100,000 people for us to go in and plant a prevailing church. And Josh and Helen Turner are enjoying the fruits of that in the, you know, days ahead. So you see a need, you carry a burden, or thirdly, you can hear a Macedonian call. But whatever happens, you need a charge or you need a call. Does that make sense? Yeah. And for some of you who are not pastors, you're in teams. Let me just say also to you guys, this is really important. You must never go and plant out of frustration. How you leave a place is how you enter a place. How you conceive is how you birth. That's why I believe there are many, many church plants with some good people, but they've carried frustration or there's been separation and they've never got traction. It's really, really important. Whenever I've been involved in church planting, it has never been out of frustration or I fell out with a pastor. I'm in Paul Sherwin's church. Oh, I'm fed up with Paul and Sally. Why don't they? I'm going to go and plant something else. That will never, ever work. Or if it begins to find some traction, it'll filter out with issues. Trust me. Because it's how it's been conceived. The only way we should move is out of a charge or a call. Does that make sense? Really, really important. So when you're talking to people, when you're thinking about places, you've got to have that real sense. I see a need. I'm carrying a burden. Or I've heard a call and it's been confirmed. And then we begin to move. So we go with a charge of call. Secondly, we go with a vision or a dream. Let me say it like this. If you're not excited, don't expect anybody else to be excited. I know Mark Oldcroft introduced me as Tigger. It's the first time ever anybody's interested in me as Tigger. I'm okay with Tigger, actually. I'd rather be Tigger than Eeyore, that's for sure. I'd rather be Tigger than Pooh. No comments, all right? You've got to be excited. And it's not fake excitement. Because this thing's got to carry you through. And while I'm talking about church, I'm talking about church revitalization that numbers of you have been involved in and I too. You've got to have a vision. You're carrying a dream in your heart. And what I would encourage you, just around three things around this, you have to speak to it. Speak to that vision. You've literally, when we came here, I was burdened, but I'd heard a Macedonian call. That's why we were here. And I were fed up for the first 6-9 months because I'm thinking, we've got no musicians, no kids. What on earth are we going to do? I don't know what we're doing here. God, why you brought us here? We've come from a vibrant church. The pastors sometimes, you know, used to get stuck into me, but at least they were vibrant. And, you know, what am I doing? We had a Macedonian call. But then what happened over time, I began to get a vision. And then I began to speak to that vision of what it could be. I was talking to myself. I was dreaming of what this could be. We're not going to remain where we are. We're not going to remain in a tatty building. We're not going to remain in just a, nobody knows who we are. I began to speak to it. And then what happens when you begin to speak to this vision, you begin to meditate on it. Does this make sense? You begin to meditate. Whatever you've got, young guys, if you've got a dream, you've got to speak to it. You've got to begin to meditate on it. Allow it to gurgitate in your heart. So it gets in you. It gets in you. And then thirdly, you have to have a period of patience. Because you want it to happen as you've visualized it or as you've dreamt it or as you've birthed it in prayer, you think it's going to be reality. And what you've got to stop doing is turning off. You've got to turn off Instagram, X, and anything else that says this church has just exploded. In 2 weeks, they've got 1,000 people. Forget all of that. Do not look at that stuff. That will do you in. That will do you in. Trust me. You've got to be patient. With this vision and dream, you've got to write it down. It's what Habakkuk says. Make it plain. You've got to write it down. What is God saying to you? Okay? So the vision and dream, we can roll back to these with questions. This, every one of them is deserving of 30, 40 minutes. But you've got to carry a vision, a dream in your heart. And it's not, oh, I've got a vision, and then you forget about it. You're speaking to it. You're meditating on it. Thirdly, with church planting, the team. There's always going to be a leader who often gets a lot of plaudits, but you have to understand it's often, they're the ones who get the plaudits, but it's a team. I don't want to single anybody out because there's a number of our team here. All the team from Arena, they're what make it. If you think this is good, they're the ones who are making it good. It's a team. And you've got to develop a team. Now, first of all, I want to say under this, there's a few headings under this thought of go with the team. First heading, the most important team, if you're married, is your family and your marriage. Okay? When I was training church planters, I would say three things to them. You've got to make sure your marriage, your money, and your mission is aligned. So where you are, if one's not convinced, don't do it. You'll put too much stress and pressure on yourself, yes? Secondly, you've got to know that in the marriage context, your money, you're okay. Because if you're carrying 30, 40, 50,000 quid's worth of debt, you're going to struggle. And I know an organization, they will not allow anybody to walk into this if they've got a lot of personal debts. And thirdly, you've got to make sure that your mission is aligned. So your number one team is your family, your marriage. We've always been taught that what's the point of taking 1,000 people, building a church of 1,000 people if your marriage is a wreck and a mess? What's the point? So that's a really important part of the team. Secondly, you've got to gather a team. Okay, you've got to gather a team. And you may say, well, how'd you do that? Well, you start to talk to people. Start to, you know, under accountability. But let's say now I'm going to use Paul and Sally here because they're at the front. They want to start doing that. They'll start to gather a team out of community. They'll gather people who are part of that church plant ethos of what they want to do. The reason why I say that team is so important is because so many people have gone alone. Don't go alone. Patrick and Lucille, who planted in Toulouse from Arena Church, it was literally just them two. They moved from Bordeaux and they went to Toulouse. I said to them at the time, this is going to be really, really tough for you, but I can't speak French. Well, I think I can actually. I do a bit of the lingo when I'm out there. I do my best. I'll do a bit of ordering and all the rest of it. Yeah, it's quite entertaining. And the French enjoy it, actually, that I've had a go. But I'm not a great, I can't, so we couldn't help them. In a sense, from Arena, we couldn't really help them. But in this instance, I knew that we could give some support to them. So even that, we could support them. But the point is, don't go alone. Don't go alone. You've got to have a team. You've got to then get in that team people who can staff, secondly, your weaknesses. People of different gifts and personality. I've said this many times before. I think Phil said it many times before, and I'm using him because he's in the room there. When Phil came and joined us here, not to plant a church, we were already on it, and Sharon, I said to him, Phil, will you come and be and come and do what I can't do, and I'll do the opposite for you. I knew what I needed. I knew I needed somebody who could handle the Bible, who could teach God's word. That was the primary gift. They loved to do it. That's what we needed. What was I doing? Staffing my weakness. In the church planting team, and I'm not telling you how many you've got in there, because different models have different places. Nikki Gumbel and the HTB, they throw so much money at it now. They'll have a kids worker, a worship leader, a curer. I mean, it's just incredible what they've got. I remember talking to him about it. I said, we're from Assemblies of God. We haven't got any of those things. You just get on with it. But you, even in the getting on with it, you've got to gather people who are different personalities, different gifts. Does that make sense? And particularly if you're not an overly detailed person. Because you need some people on there who are. Most of our conflict, Caroline and I, is because I'm not overly detailed. Caroline is massively detailed. So she will sweat the details and I'll just say, it'll all come together. Now, she doesn't always think that I'm appreciative of it, and I'm publicly, but I am, because I need somebody who's going to sweat the details, because she's part of the team. Does this make sense? So if you're going to go and pioneer, if you're not an overly detailed person, you better make sure you get somebody around you who that is what they do. They thrive in that, particularly in the areas, and we're not going to go there, of charity and of governance and of money. If you are planting a church now, you cannot just, 20, 30 years ago when I were planting, safeguarding, what was that? DBS checks, you know, counting money, you could just, yeah, let's get it, here we go. Oh, I love counting money, it goes to my bank telling, I love a bit of cash. You can't do any of that. You can't do any of that. So you got to have people who will sweat the details. Let me give you some other team. This makes sense. Gather a team. Staff your weaknesses. Thirdly, what about some apostolic team? Let me say it this way, apostolic oversight. You would be stupid to just go alone as a local church without having some oversight. We've done it over the years that we've developed Arena Church, and it's shifted over the years. I won't mention one or two people, but there's been one or two people in our past who've been incredible. I will, actually. John Partington. John Partington was incredibly helpful to us as a church. It sometimes come and say, bar, bar, black sheep, have you any wool? Yes, sir, three bags full. You're thinking, what is he going on? He gives an appeal, there's hands up all over the place, and he left a deposit in the life of the church. It was incredible. It's called apostolic. That's what it is. There was some oversight that he left. You have to have apostolic oversight if you want to get a better chance of traction. Does this make sense? Fourthly, you've got to enroll and build a prayer team. I've increasingly realized if I was now to go and say, God's called Caroline and I, we're leaving Arena Church, God's called us, we'd have all those steps, but one of the first teams that I'd begin to build would be a prayer team. A prayer covering. People who know how to pray. And it will intercede day in and day out. Because you need these teams. If you're going to get traction, it's not just the reach team, you need the prayer team. You need to build the teams for different things. And you may say, well, that sounds like a lot of people. Well, you're not just going to do it off one or two. You've got to gather 10, 20 people together who are committed to the cause. Now, just one final thought about the teams. This is an important lesson that I only learned probably 12 years ago. Michael Smith, not the Michael W. His name is actually Michael W. Smith, but not the Michael W. Smith. He is the chief of staff of ARC, which is an incredible church planting movement in North America. He taught me this. He said, you need to understand when you're building teams, people sign in one of three ways. They either sign in pencil, in pen or in blood. He said, so don't get worked up. Some people sign in pencil. They say they're going to be with you. They might end up being with you 6 months, 12 months. Don't worry about it. They've signed in because it's easy to rub out. They're now no longer in the team. Some people sign in pen. They're there a little bit longer. Just enjoy them while they're there. But then there's a third group, and they're the ones who'll sign in blood. But enjoy all three. That really released me. Because sometimes people who you've started with don't necessarily end with you. Yeah? But you need to build a team. Am I okay to keep going? Number four, plan. I switched this around a bit when I was just preparing this. I wanted to get to the team, and then we can talk about the plan. Because I say this to people, the amount of times, particularly when I was leading church planting for Assemblies of God, they would say, I've got this vision. They'd send me the visions. And I'd write back to them and say, don't tell me your vision, tell me your plan. Our own campus pastor in France sent me a 28-page document of his vision. This was before he became a campus pastor as ours. And nothing, there was nothing in there of a plan. It was just his vision. It was brilliant. I've still got it. And I went back to him. I said, fantastic. You've clearly got a vision. Tell me your plan. Are you going to execute this? Because that's where the rubber hits the road. Anybody can have a vision of doing whatever, but what are you actually going to do with it? It goes back to the don't just say, you've got to do. So part of the plan is you've got to understand your reach. Who, why, how, where, when. You've got to answer those questions. You've got to think through the pathways for discipleship. You've got to ask yourself, what kind of church do you want to build? And then you've got to begin to execute that. So there's, three things that I want to say under this. First of all, pre-launch. Everybody just wants to go, I want to get going. You need a pre-launch. This is where you're gathering the team. This is where you're praying with them. This is where you get an alignment. Can I use this phrase? This is where you're developing community. There's just a sense of pre-launch. Don't be in a hurry. I know you think the world needs saving and you are the Superman or the Superwoman, but honestly, God knows what he's doing. Make sure you work through pre-launch. Secondly, then you're thinking through the launch. You're planning the launch. What does the launch look like? It may be you're going into homes before you go anywhere else. But if you wanted to have a location, you've worked through. We'll come to that. Where are you going to meet? What time you're going to meet? Why you should meet there? What's the style of it? The worship style? What are you doing for kids? All these kinds of questions that you've got to think through at launch. Yes? So you've got your pre-launch that you're working all that through. You're then coming to your launch. And by the way, you will only get one launch. Now, that used to freak me out, actually. I remember hearing this. It was like, oh, I'm gonna make a mess of it. It's like telling kids at GCSE, oh, if you don't pass your GCSEs, your life's over. That's what teachers say. Sorry if you're a teacher in the room. That is rubbish. I want to say that's rubbish. Life is much bigger than that. Yes, it is. It is important, but it's just, you know, if the launch doesn't quite... land, you know, you go again next week, because it's amazing how quickly Sundays come round. But the launch is really important. So pre-launch, launch, and then what about planning even into 1 year? So if I was to now go again, and we try and do this now, it just becomes part of what we do. Because of the multi-site model, we're working through teaching series, we're working through milestone markers, we're working through all those kinds of things. And that's what we do with a church plant now. We'd be thinking through those things, thinking through the calendar and thinking about the 1 year. And if I can say with the plan, one other thing to say, keep the main thing the main thing. I know you've heard all this stuff before, but like I said, there's nothing new under the sun. Keep the main thing the main thing. Don't get distracted. Fifthly, looks like that quiche and pizza has just kicked in with you guys. Okay, so, yeah. So everybody say number five. Everybody say number five. What are we going to go? Well, we're going to go with faith for the journey. If you are the one who's been called to be the leader of the church plant, You've got to lead from the front. And honestly, one of the gifts that you need to ask God, the gifts of the Spirit you need to ask for is faith. The gift of faith is needed. We all know the story, don't we? I'm rubbish at telling jokes, but it goes something like this. You know, there's a guy in bed. You've got to come down. Why? I'm not getting up. It's time to go to church. No, I don't want to get up. Come on, you've got to go. Give me one reason why I should go to church. Because you're the pastor. Yeah, you've heard that story. How many times, pastors, have we thought, I don't want to go this morning? I don't want to go this morning. But you've got to have the gift of faith. The gift of faith. And in church planting, you've got to have the gift of faith. There's Esther here. There's times when you'll turn up. I mean, we've been numbers of times you think, is anybody going to be there? Nobody has turned up. Nobody knew's turned up. For months, nobody turns up. You've got to have the gift of faith. Remind yourself of what God says. Remind yourself of the vision. Remember, you speak to it. You meditate on it. You've got to have the gift of faith. You've got to be faithful and faith-filled. Both. You need faithful people, but you need some faith-filled people who are going to fill your bucket with faith of what the future can be. We easily could have quit in Mansfield. I mean, I could tell story after story. We, for a few years, we were at the King's Mill. It was freezing. You'd go and have a wee and you'd be weeing ice. It was that cold. It was sticky on the floor from the beer. It stunk, didn't it? We got locked out. All kinds of stories that I could tell you about that. And there were some seasons that I was in, I was thinking, is anybody new going to come? Are we ever going to get traction in this church plant? Everybody who comes seems to be strange. I'm just saying. Just strange. You could say like begats like, but anyway, we'll leave that alone. But they did. And you just think, I'm just being dead honest with you, because I don't want you going with rose-tinted spectacles. And it's the most thrilling, exhilarating journey if to call to church plant. And I want to encourage more and more churches to do it. But it's not for the faint-hearted. But you've got to have a faithfulness and a faith-filledness to say what God has said, I'm standing on, and I'm believing that God is going to build something here in this place. While I'm thinking about faith for journey, I'm using some words like resilience, tenacity, stickability, all qualities that you need in ministry and in life. Some people are too flaky. God said. And then the next thing, God said another thing. And then the next thing, God said, well, is God confused? What has God said? We need to have a stickability. And I think that's been our greatest quality, one of the things, in our church planting journey. We're still believing for momentum. We've got Jonathan here in Nottingham. We've got David here in Belper. Lisa, who's from our community hub. Though still, there's progress, but it's slow. And we could have even said, oh, no, we'll quit. No, we want to just continue to be faithful and faith-filled, believing that the breakthrough will come. Now, if God says, you know, it's done, we also don't want to be stupid and say we're going to keep doing it, okay? Because we're not very good at that in England, are we? We're not very good at having funeral services or, well, if something's not worked, I remember an Australian church planter said, if it's nothing, something's not worked, what you do is you brush yourself down and you go again in another place. I love that attitude. It's not blasé. I think sometimes we can overanalyze. But the point is this, we need to have a tenacity and a stickability and a resilience. Now, I'm aware some of you aren't called to be the pastor, the leader. You may say, well, what about me? Well, you're part of the team. How about you being a Jonathan? How about you? And I did a study on this. It's fascinating. You can't get absolute accuracy, but I'm telling you now, there's at least 90 men and women that the Apostle Paul worked with as part of his team. 90. These were guys who worked as part of his apostolic church planting endeavors. We need people who will stick with the pastor and the pastors through thick and thin, and who will say, I've got that stickability and we're moving forward. Can I get an amen? Amen. Number six, am I okay on time? Okay, I'll be done in a minute then. Number six, we've got to be agile and flexible. I'm not talking about in the natural, because my hamstrings always play up. I'm not a fitness person like Mark Holdcroft, okay? Well, the reason why I say this about being agile and flexible, because whilst we have a plan, so I'm not contradicting myself, we have a plan. But I think I've been in too many church planting, and I think this is where we're going at the moment, and I still do a lot of reading around church planting. I feel if they're not careful, they're making it too much of a science. A precise model. It's too prescriptive. And ministry and people is just not that. So the way I write it is this. Be a gazelle, not an elephant. Because if you're an elephant, you've got this model, and this is what, and it's big and cumbersome and it's powerful, and this is where we are. Now, I actually think church planting, you've got to be agile and flexible. You've got to be open to change. Remember what I said to you, what Jesus' words, it's Peterson's actually. He says go, and then the last thing he said, travel light. If you travel light, you can be a little bit more flexible. We had the inevitable call in Mansfield where, you can't use the venue. It was 2 days before we was meeting there, and it was leading up to Christmas. The landlord hadn't paid the football ground costs. This was in Mansfield Town. It was all in the news. There was a big punch-up, wasn't there, Phil, or something. There was somebody who got smacked and whatever. Well, anyway, we used to use their facilities on a Sunday evening. So they just said, I'm sorry, we've been locked out the ground. We can't let you in. What do we do? You've got to be agile. Nobody would say, oh, well, what are we going to do? We went and just got another place, a snooker hall. We told everybody, and then we went for it. You've got to learn to be just agile. We weren't able to put all what we wanted in that venue. Some would say, oh, you've got to have all the lights. You could have all the screens. You could have all this. No, you've just got to learn to travel a little bit light. Be willing to go with the roll with the punches. You've got to be willing to go with the changes. Even in services, you could have a, I remember one time when we was planting in Milton Keynes and we was on a really tough estate, and that evening we had about 30 travellers turn up in all the Range Rovers and whatever, and I was on to preach. Well, all I'd heard is, they're good givers. So I was like this. Brilliant. I remember to this day, I didn't preach the message that I'd prepared to preach. I didn't know whether they were born again. I just saw 30 new people come in. Now, you might say, that freaks me out. Learn to get freaked out. Have another message. Have your message. Have another evangelistic message in your Bible that you can go to if that's not your wiring. You've got to be willing to just mix it up because you're planting. Esther, what happens if 50 people walk in? You say, that would be the miracle of all miracles. But if 50 walked in and they look like they're going to cause issues, what are we going to do? And you've just prepared something of a really nice, you know, come to Jesus kind of message. You know, you've got to be willing to mix it up. I'm just saying, be agile, be flexible. There is a science. I'm just throwing it in to mess with you a little bit. I just think if we're not careful, we can be too prescriptive. And by the way, we're Pentecostals here. We say we're full of the life of the Spirit. And then when it comes to those things, oh, we can't have anything like that. Well, I'm just saying. Number seven, and I'll finish with this. This is going to be our challenge here. So Ilkeston's really growing. Tim and Helen aren't here, but they can hear this. Josh and Helen's growing. Can hear that they're the two really growing. All of them are growing, but there's real growth in the bigger campuses. And lastly, I want to say, if you're going to go on the church planting journey, and I pray you do, you got to be committed to not just stopping at one. Multiply. That's the last thing. Multiply. A friend of mine, lost a little bit of contact with him. He was part of the church planting team. He really challenged me one time. And he knew we'd planted into Mansfield. And he said to me, I remember him sitting with me, he says, if you don't plant soon, you're never going to plant again. I went, what do you mean? He says, I can see how it is, you're enjoying this. It's well-known science. I never asked him for it. I don't know whether he was just messing with my head. But he says, if you don't plant soon, he actually says this, if you don't plant in 5 years after planting, you probably won't plant. And that stirred something in me to say, I'm flipping not having that. I'm a planter. We're a church planting church. And that's where we stuck. We went to Belper, we went to Toulouse, we went to Nottingham, we went to the Hub. I mean, I wouldn't recommend that four in one weekend. I wouldn't recommend that. But you get the point. We were committed to multiplying. And again, I feel like we're in a season, and the guys have heard me in arena. We're called to plant. I was conversing with Phil, and he just said to me, 6 becomes 16. 16 becomes 26. And I just said to him, I said, that's amazing, Phil. Because I'd just been praying about that, and it was exactly those numbers. Could it be in the next 10, 15 years that 6 becomes 16 and 16 becomes 26? The point I wanted to make is, don't just rest at, you've planted one. Go and multiply. For the sake of our nation and the world. Now, I can send these fag packet notes if you want them. Okay. I've got some useful resources that I would definitely encourage you to look at, some books and some people to follow. Quickly, let me give you three books that I think are really important. Number one, How to Break Growth Barriers by Carl F. George. Planting for the Gospel is a really, really simple book that's brilliant. Graham Bennion, and I think he's written from the evangelical, is an evangelical church leader, but it's brilliant. And then the third one is Servolution by Dino Rizzo. Gives you lots and lots of resources to just go and impact your community. How to Break Growth Barriers by Carl F. George. And we've proved that. This isn't just science. Getting to 50, breaking through 80, breaking through 150, breaking through 300, breaking through 800, and then beyond. And he'll talk into all those things, the different styles of leadership that you need. The most difficult thing is getting traction into that 50. 50, then breaking through 80. Planting for the Gospel, Graham Bennion.